A lot of times, my clients will get a hold of a model. They won't really understand it, and they'll just start putting numbers in, thinking they know what they're doing, but they don't. And so, my red flag that I talk about a lot is just blindly putting numbers into a model. That's you put in numbers, you don't understand what it's doing, how it's calculated, how it affects your returns, if it affects your returns. Welcome to the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast, where precision meets performance in commercial real estate. I'm your host, Jason Williams, and every week we deep dive into the strategies and systems and stories behind rock solid underwriting. Whether you're a seasoned analyst, an up-and-coming investor, or a commercial real estate professional looking to sharpen your edge, this show is your front row seat to expert insights, emerging trends, and real-world underwriting tactics that stand the test of time and scrutiny. From market assumptions to debt structuring, cap rates to cash flow, we're cutting through the noise and getting to the numbers that matter. So sharpen your pencils and fire up those models. Let's get to work. This is Ironclad Underwriting. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. Again, I'm here with Frank Padalano, my business friend and or business partner and good friend. Last week, we talked with Coach T, try to get your mindset in order. This week, we're going back to some of the red flags that I see whenever I help my clients and students with their underwriting. And that is, a lot of times my clients will get a hold of a model. They won't really understand it. And they'll just start putting numbers in, thinking they know what they're doing, but they don't. And so my red flag that I talk about a lot is just blindly putting numbers into a model. That's you put in numbers, you don't understand what it's doing, how it's calculated, how it affects your returns, if it affects your returns. And I don't know if Frank, you have too much experience seeing this, but I know my clients who come to me asking for help with underwriting, sometimes they'll see that, hey, I increased my rent, but my numbers didn't change. And so what I do is I go into their model and I go into each individual cell and I look at the formula. It is like a choose your own adventure where I like go from this tab to this cell, make sure it's doing what's supposed to go from this tab to this cell. And you're just going all over the place. And that's what I actually offer my clients whenever I go through their underwriting. But what I see is a lot of dead cells. Sometimes my clients will get a hold of a model that's like third generation in deals. And so it like might be pristine when it was first used, but then on one deal, someone might say, well, I know that this value is supposed to be this, so I'm hard coding it in. And you overwrite the equation. And then the next time they use it, they forget about that and they keep using it and then they move it on. Or maybe they'll email it to a partner. And then they'll use that model thinking everything is working, but those cell formulas have been disconnected from what they're supposed to be doing. I've seen that numerous times. And so someone might be putting in $150 for rent premium, but then the returns don't change and say, well, all right, well, let's put in $175 rent premium. And again, their numbers don't change. That's when they usually come to me saying, hey, this isn't working. And that is at least a client who knows what's going on, but doesn't know how to fix it. But I've seen so many times a client doesn't know what's going on, doesn't even acknowledge that there's a problem, and they're just wanting help with their underwriting as a second set of eyes.
So you're talking about basically when people break the spreadsheet one way or another.
They break it or they don't. And they don't understand really what the numbers are whenever they're putting them in. Then they might think, all right, well, I'm going to put in market rents as whatever the top of the market is. And then they're like, well, then I'm going to renovate it and I'm going to charge a premium for it. And so they're putting that in. It's like $150 more. But what they ended up doing is going from like the current in-place rents to market. And they might have increased that 150, and then they increased it again, another 150, but they hard coded in that first 150 into their model. So say your rent is like 850 a month for a two bedroom. That's what the rent roll and T12 say. what they put in their model is 1,000 because they increased it to 150. And then they say, well, and then we're going to renovate it and we're going to bring it up to 1,150.
The
So.
problems I see with that is, especially in year one, when you're doing some of the rehabs, it's almost like they're underwriting either that 850 or 1,000 immediately, when that's going to take 7, 8, 10 months, and that's a lot of it starts to add up to be a lot of money when you're talking over 100 units, in
Yeah.
some of these deals.
Yeah, and that's another big thing I see is a lot of these renovations and stuff, they don't have a timeline of when they'll start. So they all start on day one of acquisition. So they're going in and actually the worst one I've ever seen is not only are they double dipping like that 150 increase, but they ended up triple dipping. And I don't even remember how they triple dipped, but they got in another 150 in there. So they went from 850 up to like 1300 in
Was that the
month
other we
one.
looked at in Ohio?
I don't believe you were involved with this one. I don't remember where it was. I'm thinking it was Idaho or Utah, maybe. I don't remember. You might have brought it to me, but I pointed it out to the people who brought it to me, and they didn't believe me, and so I had to show them, and they like got mad at me for pointing it out, but they wanted to increase rents $450 on day one, because they didn't really know what they were doing, and I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty unrealistic to me.
We've done it once, but it was in a red hot market where they had not increased rents in 10 years.
But on day one, for 100% of the units, did you have to go in
Yeah,
and
no,
change
you're
all the
right. Not on
leases?
day one. Over 3 months, our average rental increase was $550. But I mean, we also had 4 bedrooms, 90 minutes from a major city, where a 4 bedroom was renting for $1,200 a month, and market rent was $2,150.
Well, like in their pro forma or their webinar or documents for investors, they're like, we're only increasing rents $150 a month per unit. But in their spreadsheet, they were doing it 450. And so all their numbers and projections were based on the 450 and not the 150.
That's pretty hard to do.
Yeah. So that's one case where I had clients just putting numbers in and not really knowing what they were. Some other cases I have is people like really drastically underestimating what insurance would be. And this sort of goes back to the discussion we had a few weeks ago where we had like due diligence and third party verification and stuff like that. But you like a lot of times people put in like, well, I'll put in $400 for insurance because that's within this rule of thumb range. But if you're in Texas, that rule of thumb range should be close to like 1,100 a unit. You're in Florida, you're especially on the coast, you're looking at like 2,600 a unit. So,
Yeah, that's when we talk about blindly looking at numbers, this is the big thing that I'm always looking at, are these rule of thumbs. Some gurus, some syndication groups focus on them more than others. And like you said, that concept, there are some places where there was one place I was looking at even last year where they had hard quotes at like 335 a month for insurance per unit. And I said, yeah, you're gonna write in 400 anyway, and just to protect yourself. And obviously, that's still a lot cheaper. In my market, $1,300 a month is perfectly normal for insurance.
yeah, I mean, and you talk with an insurance guy, insurance is all over the place, all over the map. You get into some place where they're not going to have tornadoes or high winds and hail, you're no natural disasters really, your insurance is going to be a whole lot lower. But like coast of Florida, you're looking at 2,600 a unit I've seen. I mean, what does the coast of Florida have? They get hurricanes all the time. Billions and billions of dollars of damage, and so that's you have to pay for that through the insurance. Texas, we're in the tornado alley where we get well tornadoes sometimes, but mainly it's wind damage and hail damage, and so that's why our insurance is so high. You go
Yeah, that
into
hail damage, I assume you guys don't have a lot of solar panels.
Sometimes we do. And I believe, or I'd like to think, that the solar panels are built to be able to withstand some hail, but I imagine not all of them. But actually, there's a story. There's a property down the street. They have solar panels on like half of their units, or like one half of them. There's like 100 units on one side of the road and like 150 on the other side. And they had solar panels on one side of the road. And what ended up happening is a downburst, and that was pretty spectacular. It's like tornado damage all within like a confined area. It's like brings down 150 mile an hour winds, and then it's like almost like a reverse mushroom cloud type thing. And yeah, that was spectacular damage. But that's a tangent that we don't need to go down, because we're talking about blindly putting numbers into a model. But
So, one example I can think of with blindly putting numbers into a model is with taxes. It seems that a lot of people that, especially that are inexperienced, don't include any increase to property taxes from the time of purchase. Even I've seen it where they haven't put an increase in the first 5 years of ownership. It's like, are you guys crazy? You guys just looked at their numbers in the OM and you just wrote that number straight across. And I've even seen OMs that project out 5 years where there's not a dollar increase in the taxes. And obviously, every state and every county does their taxes a little differently. There are some places that, so I was just negotiating a deal in Ohio, and the current property taxes, while the millage rate might change, the assessment is going to stay the same for the next 4 years until there's a complete reassessment. But it's like 4 years from now, your taxes might change by over $100,000 a year. It's like you do realize that if you buy this, no matter what happens, 4 years from now, your NOI is going to go down. And if you're at a six cap, that's a $1.6 million difference in value.
yeah. So in Texas, I see the opposite. They're like, we're reducing your taxes. We're dropping the millage rate down from like 2.65 down to 2.5 or whatever. But then they increase the assessed value. So they're more than making up for the difference. So I call that shady, shady politicians trying to blow smoke.
Well, either way, you can't be blind on the taxes. You have to have someone that knows the market very well to predict. Well, while you don't expect to get an exact number, you have to have some experience on where the tax bill is going to be moving in the next few years. I mean, number one, we know on average property taxes are not going to go down. I mean, even if they go down a little bit, they're not going to go down a lot, no matter what. And usually, if you have someone that's owned it for a number of years, and especially if they haven't kept up with pricing, then you're going to get that surprise with the reassessment.
Yeah, and the thing with taxes is, if you don't plan for it before, like during your underwriting phase and before you close, you're kind of like stuck with it. You can't say, well, I'm just not going to pay it this year, because guess what happens if you don't pay it? It's like, well, we don't have the money to pay it. It's like, they don't care. They'll come in and take it from you if you don't pay it. So you have to pay it, or you lose the whole property. And so, whereas like some other expenses, like, well, with my electric bill, maybe we can push it off a month or two before we have to pay it. But with taxes, yeah, that's no go.
Or like the desktop that one of our property managers wanted to buy, even though the one that we have was fine, so we can
Yeah.
bump it for another year or two.
Yeah, that's more, yeah. So you don't have to buy the latest and greatest laptop for your on-site staff if the one that they're using works. So, but any other cases where you've seen people blindly putting numbers into a model?
I've seen a lot of people that are still underwriting multifamily loans at 75% loan to value, and even 80% sometimes. But just the whole concept that a lot of lenders are doing 70 or 65, especially if they're smaller markets, older properties. We did just look at one that was 55, and I thought that was a little low. But the blindness of putting it in at 75 or 80.
Yeah, I've seen actually a lot of times people would bring me a deal to look at, go over their numbers, and they are putting all right 80% LTV, and it's like, do you know what banks are loaning against? It's like, well, we got this quote from a bank. It's like, are you sure? Are you sure about this interest rate? Because this isn't like a resident, like your primary residence, where you can get a 80% LTV if you're going to live there and it's a single family home. It's commercial properties are a whole lot different than residential. And like you said, we've had loan products for our properties anywhere from 53% LTV up to 69 point whatever. So I have personally never seen anything above 70 in my deals.
We've done a few at 80%.
LTV or LTC? So with the LTC, you can get above that because they're covering some of your CapEx. But for like just a straight LTV, I've never seen anything above 70.
Yeah, we did a 9 unit in Rhode Island a few years ago, and we had two banks competing against each other, and one offered us 75%, and one offered us 80, and we took the 80.
Okay. Well, there you go. Let's see, what other things have I seen blindly putting numbers
So
in?
one of the things I could think of is occupancy. For some reason, most of the OMs are using a when I say occupancy, occupancy slash vacancy. I see a lot of them underwriting at a 5% vacancy rate or a 10% vacancy rate. And especially after you buy a property for the first year or so, it might be pretty hard to get to a 90% occupancy. And especially in some markets where 88% occupancy is normal, which is a little scary sometimes. It's like, how can the property management company that's helping you plan this out, how can you be underwriting at 94% occupancy if the market average is 88? And this is a C-class property that we're doing some work to, but we just got to be super careful. And they're just budgeting
Yeah.
with numbers. And like you said, we're talking numbers blindly here. They're just budgeting, and it's like, guys, we're at 80% occupancy right now, and you got a budget that starts in a month at 94% occupancy.
Yeah, I've seen that, and it's like they're disconnected from reality. It's like, okay, if you plan on getting to 94%, let's assume it's going to take 5 or 6 months to get there, because you're going to have people moving in. But at the same time, people are going to be leaving. And for a while there, you're going to be up and down, just the same number of people leaving as coming in. But eventually, you'll hit to the point where you can start getting more people coming in versus leaving. But it's going to take a while unless you like drastically change something. So.
Yeah, we're in a current deal where it basically took 8 months to turn around occupancy 14%. But
Let's
like I
see what.
said, the property manager is making a budget, and while I respect the person that made it, it's like I feel that some of the numbers were just put in there blindly. It's like, guys, we're not making any money.
Yeah. Let's see, what are some other things? We talked about rent increases, even just like an annual percent increase, whatever it is. People would blindly put in numbers I've seen. Generally, if it's like within like 2 to 5, 2 to 4%, I'm fine with that, because that could be depending on the market. If it's above 5%, I have red flags going off saying, yeah, you can't just do this. You even know what you're saying. So,
At one point, the music needs to stop, you mean, on rental
yeah.
increases?
Yeah.
Phoenix had 25% year-over-year rent growth for like 1 or 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Since San Antonio had over 30%. So, and then they both went negative shortly thereafter. Well, we talked about that already when we talked about, temporary trends for the long game. Let's see what else.
I'm thinking even with syndications, with LPs, with distributions, the concept of getting a preferred return. So if you're offering a 7% preferred return, that accrues. I know a few LPs that were shocked when it didn't come out. It's like, guys, if the property is not performing well, it's going to accrue for you in the future, but you can't get the money now. We don't have the money to give. And we're not making the money to. It's not like it's going in my pocket, and I'm an investor as well on this deal, you know?
And that's one thing, especially with LPs, is it might not be blindly putting numbers into the model, but they don't understand what those numbers are or what they mean. It's like, well, you projected me to get 3, 5%, 8% eventually cash on cash return. Where is this return? It's like, yeah, this is averaged over 7 years, and the first 2 years aren't going to be any return, and then you start making that up on the latter half of the deal. And a lot of times they don't understand it. They're not looking deeply into it. They just see numbers, and then they're like, oh, okay, this is what I'll be getting, and not digging deeper into what those numbers actually mean. So.
I'm even thinking I like the concept. I mean, there are deals out there, not every deal, but there are deals out there that promote cash flow on day one. I think I've invested in a couple of those before, but I don't think I've seen it yet where I've actually received cash flow in the first 90 days.
I've invested in deals where I got cash flow on the first 90 days, but do you know how they do it?
They overraise for it.
They raise for the cash flow. So I was like, they're just taking out like a zero interest loan from you to give it right back to you. I mean, if that's their business plan and that's what works for them, then go for it. But if that's not your business plan, don't promise it. So.
Yeah, but that also hurts the rest of your returns too, because you had to raise more, which gives everybody lower returns at the end.
Generally speaking, the more equity you have to raise, the lower your returns you're going to get.
I just taught a student that this morning.
But yeah, that's blindly putting numbers into a model, understanding what those numbers mean, how they're calculated. You have to understand these if you're going to be an underwriter. If you're going to be a limited partner investing, you need to understand what these numbers mean, because I mean, ultimately, that's what goes into your pocket at the end of the day. So you need to make sure all your formulas work right, the way they're calculated properly. And yeah, so you have anything else on blindly putting numbers into a model?
Well, you and I know that we could talk about real estate all day long. I guess the last comment I'll make about it is even the concept of rents. So if you have what you think the rent is going to be per unit and you add it all together, some people use the term gross scheduled rent for that. And a lot of people think that that number is what the rent is actually going to be. But then we have to think about physical vacancy, economic vacancy, you know, the concessions. All the different little things that come out, and then all the things you might add back on, laundry, utility, reimbursement, everything else. And it's like, then we have the effective gross income. It's like, that's a different number, and people are shocked.
Like, well, if I have 1,000 units or 100 units at $1,000 on average a unit, that should be 100,000 a month, right? Why am I only getting 50?
That's funny. Oh, that's just like the concept of. If you can make $200 a door in cash flow, how many doors do you need to leave your job? I hear that a lot. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't work that way. And not only that, but a lot of people might think it, but then they're doing no escrowing and no reserves for CapEx for appliances breaking down and everything else.
I see that a lot more for like the residential stuff.
Yeah. That's where I was going with that.
It's like it's like, yeah, I might cash flow 150, $200 a month for 9 months out of the year, and then I have $5,000 I have to spend on plumbing issues that wipes out all of my cash flow for the year. But that's what happens on my residential stuff.
Yeah, we're doing a $25,000 exterior right now. We haven't put a dime into exterior in the last 6 years in that building.
So, yeah, just make sure you understand the numbers, where they're going, how they're calculated, and what they mean, and you'll be better off. If you don't know, you can always go to ironcladunderwriting.com. I got a lot of free resources there. You can listen to this podcast like you're doing now. You can go to my YouTube channel. I have a lot of videos, free resources there. And you can hit me up on LinkedIn, Instagram. Anyway, if you need help, you can hit Frank or me up, and we'd be glad to help you in this regard. So, thanks for listening, and this is another episode of Ironclad Underwriting Podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. If you got value from today's conversation, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the show. And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or check us out at our website at ironcladunderwriting.com for more insights and updates. If you have a question, a deal you're analyzing, or a topic you want us to tackle, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep your assumptions grounded, your models sharp, and your underwriting ironclad.